Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're out on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. The hashtag is Crab Cake Tour. I'm wearing my Chicken Palooza shirt. I want to say that I had the best Chicken Palooza chicken box I've ever had. I crossed the bridge. We're going to Ocean Odyssey in Cambridge, but I was hungry. And I got two-piece white, got Western fries, ketchup, and roll, and my wife's driving on 50. We're getting down by Denton and 404. I picked this up at the Rofo behind the 5301 outlets in Queenstown. The Queenstown Rofo, best Rofo chicken I've ever had, and it's true. And I did gas up too, and I don't want to tell you what I paid because gas is too much, but everybody knows that. So my friends at Rofo putting us out on the road. You got two more weeks for Chicken Palooza. Make sure you're jumping in there and doing that. Luke Jones is here. He jumped in and did the fake football thing on Saturday night. And now on the backside of fake football and who's the quarterback and who's on the offensive line and how are we going to run the ball and who's going to catch the ball. But another game this week. And I guess they're going to try to sandwich what used to be week two and week three into now what is week two and a half. And Lamar hasn't walked on the field yet. And the preseason's half over, more than half over, if you think the third game is the fourth game, which was trash. Luke, times will tell, but I would say this, amidst the offensive line, and I don't want to say chaos, but lack of clarity at this point, right? The nebulous nature of position issues, injury issues, depth, wherever there's some soft tissue on the roster, practices, getting on a plane, going out in the heat, playing a game this week. John would probably tell you this is the most important week of preseason, right?
Easily. I mean, I think even acknowledging some guys that won't be back just yet, but just the evaluation opportunity. I mean, this is really a supersized week when you consider, okay, you're going to Carolina, you're going to play the Panthers on Saturday night. Great. You know, preseason game two, I would assume we'll see Lamar Jackson. We'll see a few more veterans who were held out, which wasn't surprising as far as Saturday against New Orleans, but these joint practices, we've talked about this a lot in recent years, how these coaches love having the opportunity to compete against unfamiliar players, you know, someone in another jersey, which, you know, you always hear them talk about that during training camp. Guys are tired of hitting each other. So that's why they do like the preseason games. But you get an opportunity here to have a controlled environment where you can evaluate against another team. You know, I mean, we saw it some instances, and I even saw some reporters around the league, you know, at different games where I think there was a team that kicked a field goal at the 4-yard line or something like that. And a reporter was just saying, what are you getting out of that? You know, well, you get a fourth and goal opportunity from the 4 and you're kicking a field goal there. Well, I guess maybe they wanted to give their field goal team a rep, but it, you know, there's a situation
where they want to win 18 games in a row in the preseason.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe that, but, but you have those certain game scenarios that for whatever reason, they won't manifest in the preseason. You won't get that fourth and a certain amount of yardage where you want to try this certain package or this certain menu of plays. And that just doesn't come together. Well, joint practices, if you and the opposing head coach are on the same page and as far as what you want to get out of this, you can plan it out. Yeah, we're going to do a period where we work on third down inside the red zone. We're going to have a period where we're going to work on a lot of our outside the numbers passing game, you know, 12 personnel. I mean, you go down the list. Whatever both coaches wants to try to accomplish, you now have this forum where you can practice against another team. So you're not having these guys that at this point, I mean, Marcus Peters knows what makes every single Ravens wide receiver tick at this point, right? He's gone up against them now for 2.5 weeks, and some guys longer than that as far as some of the veterans. But go up against Carolina, you're not as familiar with all those guys, and you're not as familiar with their offense or what they do defensively. So these coaches love it, but it just gives them that controlled environment as opposed to a game where, you know, everything that goes on with games, TV timeouts and all of that, you know, not
Harbaugh even had to give a little pep talk on a sideline the other night, right?
Yeah, exactly. So they love that. So you're going to have that evaluation for a 2-day period down in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and then you'll play a game on Saturday night, which, you know, I mean, we'll see how that looks after those 2 days. But, you know, I think based on how their joint practices have gone in the past. I feel like the only one that they weren't thrilled about was Chip Kelly and the Eagles years back, where if you recall, Chip Kelly actually ended up game planning against them for the preseason game and they got steamrolled. And I know John was not happy about that. And it's actually why they shelved joint practices for a short time after that. But
well, you know what I saw the other day? I saw the replay, and I don't even remember this play, but the Redskins played the Ravens and there was like a really chippy play and everybody got in a fist fight. Do you remember mm-hmm. this in a preseason game?
That was remember Jay Gruden and Harbaugh got after
Joe Harbaugh came across the field, was going to kill Jay. Then he was going to kill Brent Harris. Was that the same game?
I don't know if that was the same game.
Maybe not. I don't know. But John was,
he was not
really
happy.
Really ripe. And right. So there's that too, of whatever that was, that chippiness. That sort of weird stuff happens during these practices where
it can,
by the time they go to play on Saturday night, they don't like each other at all.
There can be some of that from time to time. In fact, I wasn't there, but remember when they practiced in Indianapolis a few years back, there ended up being a pretty big, you know, I wouldn't say it was a full scale brawl, but there were punches thrown by between a couple players. So there was some of that, but it's a competitive environment, but it's a controlled environment. And I think that's what the coaches really like here, because they can practice very specific things they want to practice that, you know, with the clock and you know, penalties and different things that happen over the course of a 60-minute ball game that you're not going to get a chance to practice. You know, I mean, we've seen the Ravens run trick plays on special teams in the preseason. I don't really understand the purpose of that, but they've done it. So, But the point is, you want to practice certain things. You want to see certain things. You want to see certain plays, certain personnel packages, whatever it might be. And these joint practices provide a great environment for that. But they can go thud. They, you know, they can go three-quarter speed for something specific, whatever it might be, that you're not going to have that in the live game setting. So, you know, they'll still play the game and, you know, we'll see what that looks like. But this is a big week in those terms. I think evaluation-wise, for young guys who have played well early in camp, who took it to the game and played well in the game, now it's like, okay, now you're going to practice against the Carolina Panthers for two straight days. And those are guys that you're not going to be as familiar with as practicing against your own teammates. And you're not going to be as familiar with what they do offensively or defensively. Let's see you do it in this environment. So I think for the young guys that are kind of pushing for that roster spot, I think this is a huge week for them, because we've talked about this, whether that third preseason game feels like the third or feels like the fourth, you know, where it's kind of the throwaway and just the young guys playing. We know by that point in time, most of the roster moves and decisions have pretty much been made. So this is probably the last best chance for some of these bubble guys to really make a great impression over the course of this week.
All right, so where are we with bubble guys and special teams? And let's just assume Zeitler's fine. Let's just assume Ronnie Stanley's fine. We've gone doomsday in the other circumstances. Where is the depth chart defensively? And I would think that at some point in the next week to 10 days, you're going to be sending out WNST text, courtesy of Coons Baltimore Ford, with names that we remember from the third weekend of April, because I think we're at that point with the depth of this roster and the people they're bringing in. You still seem to think they're going to bring in a guy we still haven't heard of to play tackle as a backup or a swing tackle, because you don't think they have an answer, and they might not have an answer. Give me some names and some guys we're going to need to watch here this week.
Well, I mean, we've talked a lot about the offensive line. I think their top seven's pretty decided. I mean, we know they're projected starting five. If we're talking putting Ben Cleveland in that group, we know Tyree Phillips will be, you know, the number six or number seven guy, Patrick McCary being the other. So you kind of have those seven, and you figure most years they keep nine. So Ben Powers, who did not play well on Saturday night, it was ugly. You know, he struggled at left guard and right tackle, which they've kind of been trying with him, I think, to see if he can be a versatile game day option. Like Patrick McCary can play all five spots. He doesn't play all five of them particularly well, but he at least plays a couple of them well. And in a pinch, you know, you get two injuries on game day, you usually only have two linemen that are up as reserves. So,
yeah, well, I mean, I've seen games where tight ends are playing guard.
Exactly.
That's what happens.
So that's why a guy like McCary, who is not a starter, his best role is a backup, but if he can play all five spots and play two or three of them pretty well, as a fill in, and then the other two, he can be functional, let's say, then, hey, he's going to be on the team. But, you look at Tristan Colon, you look at Ben Bredesen, Ben Powers, is there a room for one of those veterans I mentioned, Michael Schofield or Andre Smith? What I saw on Saturday night and what I've seen in practice, I'm not sure they're going to hold on to a veteran guy that isn't playing at a particularly high level as a backup.
Depending on how they feel about Stanley too.
Well, sure. And again, that so much of that is going to hinge on what does he look like? On similar lines, Nick Boyle, coming back and, hasn't been practicing yet, had the cleanup procedure in June, that third tight end spot. I think it's Josh Oliver, who they got from Jacksonville for the late round pick, former third round pick who was hurt for the Jaguars for his first couple seasons. However, if Nick Boyle isn't ready to go week one, does that open the door for Eric Tomlinson, who, remember, was their blocking tight end that they added down the stretch last year? So some moving parts there. Wide receiver, it's so tough for me to figure that out right now when, we know Bateman's going to be out. At least I would think, I think it'd be a miracle if he's ready for week one. If he's out the first couple weeks, do you put him on IR? Remember, the IR rule is just like last year, 3 weeks, three game minimum now, as opposed to eight. So it does change the math a little bit on trying to project these injuries and how that impacts the roster. Prochet, I think he's safe as the number six wide receiver at this point, even though he might be the number three wide receiver based on their injuries right now. Miles Boykin, he's been out since the first week with a hamstring injury. He was kind of on the bubble anyway. Is his time up, or do they stash him on IR because they don't want to cut a third round pick from a couple years ago? I think what's really interesting, though, a lot of what I just mentioned are some attrition situations, trying to find a couple guys that you feel are good enough. I think on the defensive side of the ball, it's really interesting when you get into the secondary. We've talked about this, and we know you can never have enough corners, right? And even last year, they had times where Anthony Levine was the nickel late in the second Cleveland game because they had a bunch of injuries. But, when you look at their top guys, Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters, Tavon Young, if he's healthy, and that's a big if, but he's healthy right now, and we know he can play when he's healthy. Jimmy Smith, who is banged up with the ankle right now, but should be ready to go for the start of the season based on what we've been told. But then you go down the list, Anthony Averett, who has played at a high level at times over his first few years. I think he's a quality backup, but in the final year of his rookie contract, where does that factor into this equation? Chris Westry, taunting penalty aside on Saturday night, has been one of the big surprises of camp. He's 6'4". He makes plays on the ball constantly. He's got swagger to his detriment at times, as we saw on Saturday, but he's the kind of guy, that outside corner depth that you love to have, that, let's face it, Jimmy Smith, this is probably it for him. It was close to being it for him last year before, he had a conversation with Eric DaCosta and basically said, hey, come back for another year. And he's like, all right. But you'd like having that outside corner depth, but you just drafted Sean Wade in the fifth round. I've just named we're talking about 6, 7, 8 corners here. I mean, you can't keep 8 corners on your roster. So what does that look like? I haven't even mentioned Devontae Harris, who was one of their best special teams players late last year, but is technically a corner. So you have that. You have safety, where I think Brandon Stevens, the third round pick, really impressive on Saturday night. They played him at nickel. They played him at corner. He blitzed. He looked pretty solid in coverage. Couple hiccups on a couple zone coverages where he didn't react quickly enough, but Wink Martindale likes him, and I think he's someone that you could see involved in their dime package as a third safety, and maybe they move Chuck Clark or Deshaun Elliott into the box on occasion. So, kind of what they did 2 years ago, if you remember, Brandon Carr played safety late in the year when they went to three safeties. It was he and and Earl Thomas back deep, and they had Chuck Clark playing in the box. So,
well, they always feel like they can coach up that kind of athleticism.
Yeah. So but now I'm Geno Stone, who had two picks on Saturday night, he's on the bubble. Ardarius Washington, the rookie free agent, who I think is kind of the one undrafted rookie who has a chance. You know, he made a couple plays, put his helmet right on the ball for a forced fumble. Anthony Levine's in the mix there. Jordan Richards is in the mix there. Those guys are core special teams players, but do they give you enough positional value now? So, Nestor, I wasn't counting with my fingers, but too many defensive backs, right? Too many secondary members there that I just reeled off. They're going to have some decisions, and I guarantee you, unless they have a couple injuries, and look, there's still a few weeks to go here, so there could be injuries, but there's a very good chance, let's say, if not a guarantee, that they're going to be cutting a couple guys that are absolutely NFL caliber defensive backs that they'd like to hold on to, and they're just not going to have room for. So I think that's where things are really interesting. And then outside linebacker.
Well, also from a trade perspective and horse trading, because Eric doesn't give away assets.
Yeah.
So yeah, but Kerry Vedvig, I know you made a Kerry Vedvig joke out on social media.
Yeah, Jake Verity, the toast of the town now, after hitting a 53-yard field goal, I think it was. So, I think outside linebacker, the top five, I think, are set. You have Houston, you have Bowser, Pernell McPhee, you would assume is safe. He was held out on Saturday night. They love his ability to set the edge, even if he's a little long in the tooth at this point. And of course, the two rookies they drafted, who, Owe and Hayes, both flashed. I mean, Hayes had a really nice dip move coming off the edge for a quarterback hit. Probably could have been a sack. It looked like the quarterback's knee was down. But what does that mean for Jalen Ferguson, who, by the way, I thought he played a heck of a football game on Saturday night. He played like a guy who recognized, I'm not on scholarship anymore. So now he has to keep that going, and the numbers are the numbers, but there's another potential, as you just alluded to. Maybe you move Jalen Ferguson to go get that piece you need elsewhere on the offensive line, let's say, or you package him and a day three pick for, I don't know, a starting caliber left guard. If you're not, if Ben Cleveland has missed too much time and you're worried there, I'm just throwing out a theoretical there, but hypothetical, but there are some definite decisions to be made. And notice, I really mentioned it being on the defensive side of the ball. Their secondary is so deep at this point, with interesting young players that, not saying they're going to be stars, but guys that have looked good enough to say, I'd like to have him as a backup, because we know corners get hurt and safeties get hurt, and need
that. The Ravens have been good at hiding guys over the years. Just being creative in however they're not going to let anybody go for nothing that they really value.
Right. No question about it. And, I haven't mentioned the defensive line. I don't think the numbers are quite as problematic there, but we've talked about this a lot. That defensive line's old. Brandon Williams, Calais Campbell, Derek Wolf, and Justin Ellis, all 30 or older. So, Ellis, I think, he's not a lock, just because of, when you're a backup nose tackle that's 30 years old, and you have an Aaron Crawford who played pretty darn well on Saturday night. You have Broderick Washington that's still in the mix there. We know Justin Matabike at this point, they think he's going to be a starter for them. If not this year, he's going to play starter snaps at least, and he'll be a starter for them moving forward after that. That's how high they are on him. But you want to see a couple young guys there emerge, and that's why it was good to see the defensive line play the way it did on Saturday night, because they held out the veterans, which made sense. You don't need to see Calais Campbell in the preseason for more than maybe for him to get a couple series at some point here over the next couple weeks, but you saw those young guys play extensively, and you want a little more youth there, because we saw this last year when Campbell and Brandon Williams had some health concerns, what that meant for their run defense. It wasn't good. So good to see some of those young guys. So I just said it, we went through every level of the defense, and didn't mention inside linebacker quite as much. I think that's pretty set. Maybe Christian Welch as a special teams guy as a fifth inside linebacker, but every level of that defense, there are decisions to be made. And I think they are good decisions in the sense that you're not just trying to pick out the best of the rest, where you're just like, we need another guy at this spot. You know, which one is the best out of these guys that we're not really excited about? I don't think it's the case for their defense. I think they like these guys, and I think they like a lot of these young guys a lot. So they're gonna have some tough decisions to make. But you know, that's why I kind of, going back to, as much as we kind of mock this 18 game preseason winning streak and how weird it is and how it doesn't really mean anything to the big picture, but I think you go back and look, I think over those 18 games, they've given up 20 points once over those 18 games. What does that tell you? Pretty good defensive depth that has really shown up in the second, third, fourth quarter, where they're just overwhelming other teams. And it's a credit to Eric DaCosta and the scouts and the coaching staff for identifying these guys and developing them. Even if they don't stick in Baltimore, they're at least showing some ability to play. And again, who cares about a preseason win? But it's nice to talk about having a lot of options at those positions, which the Ravens seem to have on the defensive side right now.
Luke Jones will be in Owings Mills, but not Spartanburg, although my mother was from Abbeville, South Carolina. They have a lovely peach in Gaffney, South Carolina. The Gaffney peach that oversits Greenville and Spartanburg down in South Carolina. I almost saw Springsteen down there a couple years ago, but my day will come. Pearl Jam will play there before it's all over. You can find Luke Baltimore Luke and obviously all things Ravens as we get up on the second game. I'm out on the road doing the Crab Cake Tour. The hashtag is Crab Cake Tour. You'll hear from Michael Steele and lots of folks here this week as I continue to pick up crab cakes and head to Ocean City. Luke, I'm going to stop our Ravens part of the conversation now and just give you a little bit of oxygen, because you spent far more time with the baseball team than you should. I'm mean like that as a cruel boss. The Chris Davis era has come to an end. Wow, right?
Like, yeah.
When's the last time he was a major league player? Like, I'm being really honest with you, where he stood
that
in the
box. That he actually played?
2017, 18.
Well, I mean, he's played. I mean, he's played. He's,
no, I mean, like, 40. Been a major league player for 3 weeks in a row and hit 241, like something that would make him a major league player.
I mean, I think you have to go back to 2017, which the numbers weren't pretty then. I mean, he hit 215. I think his OPS was in the low 700s, but at least that still wasn't in that embarrassing territory where, I mean, 2018, a historically terrible, arguably the worst season in major league history for an everyday position player. And okay, it was a little bit better in 2019. This thing's been over for a long time. I think what's unfortunate here, and not unfortunate because, hey, the Orioles, they made this decision, and hey, he's a professional ball player, and it's a results driven business, but it's so tough to kind of marry what was the beginning of the Chris Davis era, which, I mean, we all remember how he hit at the end of the 2012 season when they're trying to, you know, qualify and make it as a wild card, and you know, how, you know, he went down to Tampa and had that big series where he hit that bomb to dead center, and of course hits 53 home runs in 2013, and we remember him pitching in at Fenway in 2012, and you know, 2014, of course, had the poor season and, you know, that the Adderall suspension and what that meant, and then comes back and hits 47 home runs the following year. You know, what I just mentioned there, there was a lot of good there. There was a lot of fun Chris Davis moments that were in there early on that I think just, even if you're trying, and I've seen some people on social media trying to, you know, paint a pretty picture, but it was just so ugly over these last 4 years that me personally, you know, and this is putting my fan hat on for a moment, it's really tough to try to reconcile the beginning of it, which was a lot of fun and was impressive. I mean, this guy has the franchise record for home runs in a season. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, those first four games of 2013, when I think he drove in 16 runs, I mean, just the extraordinary stuff. But then what he became over these last few years, and some of it unfair to him in the sense that, you know, they were going to go through a rebuilding regardless of whether they had elected to re-sign him or not. But he's the one who stuck, you know, he's the one that was still here. That was the reminder of that previous Showalter Duquette era that wasn't perfect, but hey, three postseason appearances. There was a lot of fun that was mixed in there, but that wasn't the Chris
and
Davis
barbecue for you and I.
Yeah. Yeah. But that wasn't the Chris Davis from that era whatsoever. And, you know, I mean, this is something that should have been done 2 years ago. We know why it wasn't, and I'm not gonna sit here and defend the organization about that. I mean, sunk cost is a sunk cost. You know, at some point you're going to pay them regardless. But at this point now, you move on, and he's not going to be taking up a spot on the 40-man roster in the offseason, and you move on, and you hope that this rebuild starts looking more promising at some point over the at the major league level, at least, because it has been absolutely brutal. Just absolutely brutal. I mean, they had the nice little start post All-Star break. You know, they sweep the Nats. Okay, it's fun for a few days. But what we've seen over the last 2 weeks with just pitching that's just not even competitive. I mean, just absolutely woeful. Into the game, and you're already turning the channel. If you tuned in the first place, you're already turning the channel. So I've said this before, and it bears repeating. We knew this was going to be a long process, and when you do look at what things that are happening on the farm, there's still a lot to like, and there are things to be optimistic about. I mean, Adley Rutschman's a Triple-A now, for example. But the biggest disappointment for me in 2021 as it pertains to the major league team is Dean Kramer, Keegan Aiken. Bruce Zimmerman was okay, and I mean, now the sprained ankle on top of the bicep injury, I mean, disappointing there. You know, but Zach Lowther with injuries or ineffectiveness. You know, this was a tier of young pitching that wasn't Grayson Rodriguez and DL Hall. Let's be clear, we're not talking about guys that are top 50 prospects, but at least guys that were still relatively highly thought of in the sense
that get some fruit out of this.
That they at least had a chance.
Major league play. You wanted to find pile divers.
Right, right. I mean, at least some guys that, I mean, give me a sub-5 ERA at least. I'm not asking for much there. At least come out and you can give them 5 innings and, you know, give up 3 or 4 runs as opposed to getting bombed and you're out in the second or third and you've already lost the game, and now Brandon Hyde's scrambling to try to cover the last 6 innings of the game and not wear out his bullpen that isn't that good either. So, you know, for Aiken, who had extensive Triple-A experience already, you know, Kramer didn't have quite as much, but we saw these guys pitch last year, and I know it was a weird, fake kind of 60-game, bizarre, surreal kind of season. So we know September baseball is a fuller. Buck Showalter used to say that all the time. You know, don't get too caught up in what guys do as it's September call-up. But I was expecting more out of those guys, and I'll say this. It's defenders of Mike Elias and the current regime would say, well, those weren't Elias's prospects. They weren't guys that they added, but My point of contention would be, if you have enough conviction in what you do on the pitching development side and your secret sauce, so to speak, and I'm not even trying to talk about, you know, foreign substances on the baseball there, you know, although, you know, it's kind of ironic to use that terminology now, but, you know, what you do in terms of your process and your development, I'm disappointed not to see more functional performance out of those guys. Now, like I said, I'm not even asking for, not asking for a 3 ERA. Look like you have a chance to be a fifth starter, which Bruce Zimmerman has at least done when he's been healthy. But the other guys,
you're looking, you know, for shades been, of Miguel Gonzalez and Wei and Chen.
I mean, like I said, I mean, just give me an ERA in the high fours at least, you know, which isn't special. That's not very good, but it's at least good enough to say, I'm going to give you the ball every 5 days and let you continue to grow. I mean, these guys have just gotten pummeled.
Well, good enough to say you're a major league pitcher. These guys right. are major league pitchers.
Yeah. Right. I mean, maybe, and you don't want to give up on them just yet. But at the same time, like in the case of Keegan Aiken, who has been getting starts at the major league level that he doesn't deserve, quite frankly. And that just speaks to how bad their situation is pitching wise at the major league level and where it's been at Triple-A right now. You know, and I'm not talking like Mike Ballman, who, you know, just got there recently and, you know, he's actually, you know, gotten himself on track and has pitched really well the last couple months. But guys that are kind of just your organizational depth at the Triple-A level right now, that we've seen them and they're not it. I mean, it's just that simple. So that's more so than looking at their specific record or anything like that. You know, I mean, embarrassing factoids and these long losing streaks is just not seeing a step forward from at least a couple more of those guys. And look, they'd still be in last place. They'd still be by far the worst team in the division. They'd still be a team that's looking at a top 2 or 3 pick in the draft next year. I mean, wouldn't change any of those things, but at least you could identify a couple more positives at the major league level that frankly haven't been there. I mean, Cedric Mullins has been amazing. I mean, this is a guy who should garner MVP votes for the league. I'm not saying he's going to win, but he should garner that. He's up in that tier. You know, he's been among the five or six best players in the American League. That's how good he's been.
Well, the kid that's coming in from Anaheim next Tuesday that I'm having a crab cake around with, Tom Perez, he's kind of been a little special too.
Yeah, he's okay. Yeah, he's okay. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing Ohtani in Baltimore. There's no question.
I'm trying to figure if he's going to pitch on Tuesday or not. I'm trying to figure out the
rotation.
I
hope so. I hope so. Because you certainly know whoever's pitching on the other side, not named John Means, isn't going
to
be worth watching.
Somebody said to me, will people come out to see him play? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if people even know that he will be in town. That's why I even talked about it, because I circled it. Luke, I have not been to an Oriole game this year. Now, that's not unusual since 2006. I've had a few years. I had several years where I didn't go. And lately, I go to a game or two because somebody hands me a ticket or there's just some reason to go. There's not been a whole lot of reason to go this year. Shohei Ohtani is a reason to go. So that's why I'm going and having a Fadley's crab cake next Tuesday with Tom Perez.
And that's a great call, because Shohei Ohtani is a reason to go. And, you know, we haven't mentioned it. Thought the Field of Dreams thing last week, really cool. You know, I thought that was neat. You know, I didn't watch it live beginning to end, but had a chance to see some chunks of it. And certainly baseball did a good job with some of the social media aspects.
Look, I've been driving past nothing but cornfields
there
the last 14 days. And the other part of it is, and this is a tribute to you and your little league, every time I pass, because we've been off the road, man, I have passed so many, the Cambridge Little League, you know, like little leagues at the end of roads near water in Southern Maryland. And there's a field. If you drive to the end of Hooper's Island, not only will you get a great crab cake at Old Salty's, okay, but Old Salty sits at the foot of Ballpark Road. And you know what's on Ballpark Road? A ballpark.
There you go.
With a fence, an outfield little league fence for home runs like the Bad News Bears. We didn't have that because I was poor in Dundalk.
Yeah, I didn't play on I had a couple ball fields where we had fences, but a lot where you know, you just hit the ball and you ran for as long as your coach told you to.
That's a field of dreams to me, you know.
But you and I've talked a lot about baseball, its future, trying to attract more fans, different things they do poorly, different things that this was something they did well. And Shohei Ohtani, we saw it at the All-Star game. He is everything right about the game right now, and he is fun. Even with the challenge of the language and, you know, an interpreter, his personality and his charisma shines through. If you've ever seen him talk with his interpreter, he is a phenomenal talent. We're watching something historic here, and we really are. And as much as people will use the Babe Ruth comparison, and look, I mean, Babe Ruth is Babe Ruth, but even Babe Ruth didn't really try to be a two-way player for too long. He kind of went from pitching, and then he was hitting a little bit more and more, and then he was done pitching within a year or two. I mean, that wasn't
Bo Jackson,
a long time.
Deion Sanders, all of Brian Jordan, all those guys, they did it for a minute, and they didn't do it long.
Right. It's very difficult to do. So I have no idea if Shohei Ohtani is going to play another 10 years or 5 years or this only lasts a couple years and, you know, health or injuries or whatever catch up to him. I don't know. But what we're witnessing right now, I hope people who love baseball, even if you're disenchanted with the Orioles right now or the state of Major League Baseball or Rob Manfred or any of that stuff.
Or even if you don't want to give the Orioles $21 next year.
Any of that, enjoy Shohei Ohtani, because what we're seeing is something that is absolutely historic. And, you know, it's funny, as you know, I'm quite close with my brother-in-law. He's a Philadelphia sports fan, and, you know, we'll talk Orioles and Phillies and everything. But, you know, you can ask him who my sports man crush has become here over the last few months. It's Shohei Ohtani, because it is just what he's doing is just incredible. And every time he's on the TV, whether it's a game, whether it's a highlight of his, I'm stopping and watching, because we're seeing something that we have not seen very, very often in the history of the game.
Are baseball locker rooms like open with a mask? Like, what's the story? What's going on with media? I don't have a press. I'm wondering, like, will he have a press conference? What will happen when he's here next Tuesday?
There is no clubhouse access at this point. They have on-field kind of, you know, the warning track between the dugouts. You know, media can go there. Brandon Hyde's pregame press comp, you know, pregame is in the dugout. So, you know, we're doing that and it's outside. So that's fine. You know, that's a typical scrum, you know, kind of reminds you of old media where you're just holding up your recorder and, you know, we're outside and everyone's vaccinated. So no concerns there. But, you know, no clubhouse at this point. You know, the post game for baseball is still on Zoom. You know, they haven't facilitated in person. Post game.
So you don't go down to a little room where they
No. It's on the field prior to the game, and you know it's tough because the players are out there doing batting practice, so they're not stopping for too many interviews. But it's at least gotten back to the point. And the same thing with the Ravens now, with you know the in person, you know the podium out in Owings Mills or the interview room with everyone masked after Saturday night's game, the interview room was open up downstairs in the bowels of the stadium. But it's at least nice to lay your own eyes on these guys and for them to lay their eyes on you again and you know, say hello. And you know, it's not back to normal just yet, but it's better than Zoom only at this point. So we're getting there and hopefully we'll continue to move in that direction here over the next, you know, coming weeks and months.
Football, baseball, crab cakes, summer, peaches, gold watermelon. I'm doing it all. All of it brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. I've been on the road making sure that I'm getting fresh fruits. And the thing I've been doing the most at Wise Markets, I told Rob Santoni this week, coconut water. It's been so hot. I've been going through water and coconut water on the road and fresh fruit every morning. Big shout out to our friends at Wise. And I am going to be having the Wise Crab Cake. Going to be doing that at Store 206 Fullerton. That's across from where Tully's used to be in Fullerton, just at Bel Air Road and the Beltway. So come on, that's the 19th. It's the day we beat the Chiefs. That morning, I will be out at probably at 11 or noon. I'll be out at Wise, and we're going to be eating the signature crab cake and eating crabs, big fat ones, hopefully from the Choptank River because they're delicious down there. Lots and lots of video up of crabs and crab cakes and places and things and the Eastern Shore and the Bill Burton Fishing Bridge. All of it brought to you by our friends at Coons Ford of Baltimore. And Dennis will be here all week long. He's getting geeked for football season. And Luke will be here with him on Thursday. I will be here with him on Thursday as well. So shout out to all of our sponsors, including our friends at Planet Fitness. Make sure you're getting in shape. I'm going to be stopping at the Planet Fitness down in Salisbury, as well as in Western Maryland. A lot of our sponsors involved all over the state, not just in Baltimore. So as I make my way west next week and east to Ocean City this weekend, we'll be stopping, honking the horn, and probably eating some chicken from Royal Farms. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking some Ravens, some Orioles, and some Baltimore positive.